This is Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie.
All right, this hour we'll take your calls and continue chatting with James Sanders about these flights that have tragically gone down. The latest, of course, the Malaysia flight over Ukraine shot down by someone. And we're going to be back with James as we talk about his thoughts on the downing of TWA Flight 800, this being the 18th year anniversary. Unbelievable at how fast time goes by. And welcome back to Coast, James Sanders with us. So to get a better handle on what all of this is, Ramzi Youssef, his real name apparently is Abdul Basit, was convicted of the 1993 World Trade Center bombing and also the plot on, it's called the Bojinka, which was to take down a number of planes all at one time, James. Right. So if the United States Navy is out there in the ocean with a missile attempting to take down a smaller plane that might be used as a terrorist attack against TWA Flight 800 or any other bigger plane, how did they know? How did the Navy get word of this?
Well, if my scenario is correct, and I have every reason to believe that it is, then, of course, that would have come from the FBI and the Justice Department, who are running this thing, actually trying to set up a defensive perimeter. I'm sure that you would have seen greatly enhanced security that day at JFK. There's no way to go back and prove it without finding documents, and good luck there until the 25-year period has passed, when documents are a little bit easier to get a hold of. But every sign is that the CEC, first of all, the Navy had incredible faith in the CEC. And this was supposed to be something that was right at, it was probably the final, if everything went smooth, they were going to sign it off for combat. And this was in 1996, so that the next time they had to go sailing into the Middle East or anywhere else where there were civilian airliners, they could reasonably be assured that they could have full combat going in the air, and a commercial airliner could go putting through, and the U.S. Navy would not shoot it down. Well, something went terribly wrong, and it's only been within the last few months, not even a year, I believe, since, you know, they were going to do it in 1996, sign it off. Well, then everything went quiet for all these 18 years, and now within the last year, you're finally starting to see where they're signing it off for combat. It took all that time to do it, and one of the vessels undoubtedly involved in it was the Seawolf. It was not yet a Navy vessel. It was undergoing sea trials, and from an absolutely impeccable source, I learned that it was our first submarine to have an underwater firing capability, anti-aircraft firing, missile firing capability, what's called littoral warfare. Here you have this, what, $3 billion submarine. It's going in, and any raghead with a, excuse me, but, you know, any Arab or whatever, in a Cessna 172 with a small bomb underneath in shallow water, that $3 billion submarine can be taken out by probably about a 50 to 100-pound bomb underneath a very small airplane. So they needed the ability to try to extend this program. There were only going to be Congress had only authorized three of the Seawolf-class submarines. And this was part of the process of saying, see, we need to spend $3 billion times God knows how many for a whole fleet of these things that now can defend themselves in littoral warfare. I am confident that the Seawolf was one of the places where a missile came from. There was more than one missile, but it was one of the places where it came from. Shortly after that disaster happened, the Seawolf, and I got this from Navy people over at was in Groton, Connecticut, there where it was, it came back to its dock, and it had a security thing put over it so satellites and eyes could not see what was going on, and the system was ripped out of the thing.
Just an amazing series of events, James, that unfolded at that time. And, of course, they were petrified to say that terrorism was affecting our airlines. So they had to keep quiet.
Because of what I would have to call political cowardice. You know, there's times for courage and times for not. But the Clintons, I will confess to not being a lover of the Clintons, so take it with a grain of salt. They were the most Machiavellian team that ever occupied the White House. They had an opportunity to do it right, at which time the national security apparatus could have efficiently operated. Instead, they thought of themselves first. And I suspect, when you think about it, and Jack Cashel did some really good work on this.
He sure did.
The work that he did on this, you can pretty much see that they went, we got to cover it up for now. Let's see if we can't squeeze it by the election, and then we'll see if we can't deal with it more honestly. That seems to have been the initial.
Mm-hmm.
But then it doesn't take them long to figure out, wow, this thing's out of control. We have
Let's
no choice.
Let's just keep the lid on it. And they have.
And they have. Right, and they might be able to keep the lid on it until after the 25-year mark. We're going to find out. I have initiated a program over the last few months that's going to force them to make a decision on whether to begin releasing the documents now or whether they're going to dummy up for 7 more years.
This situation that happened today with this Malaysia Airlines flight to 17, one Canadian apparently on the flight, Jim, a lot of people from the Netherlands, a tragedy, no doubt. I really am beginning to think this plane was in the wrong place at the wrong time, shot down by rebels who had access to a Russian missile system, and they probably thought it was some kind of Ukrainian air cargo plane or something like that.
So far, there's no reason to believe anything else. Who knows what's going to come?
Who knows?
You know, it's in the future. But we have to remember, this isn't the NTSB doing it, and this isn't the Clinton administration doing it. I don't know that the NTSB, of course, under Jim Hall, appointed by Clinton, who had absolutely no business running the NTSB, but it was a highly politicized, totally politicized organization. And first you come up with a political solution, and then you make the investigation fit it. I don't know that the NTSB operates that way anymore, and I doubt that they can get away with that over, I'm sure Putin, if his guys over in the Ukraine did it, I'm sure if he could figure out a way to not have to take a responsibility for it, he would, but I doubt that he can.
Let's take some calls. We'll go to Pennsylvania first. Jim's with us. Hey, Jim, thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Thank you, George. Mr. Sanders, it's a pleasure to talk to you. I actually lost a man that I grew up with from Pennsylvania. He was on TWA Flight 800.
Oh, geez.
But the reason why I was calling, two things just jumped out at me today about this Flight 17 coming down is, number one, what Air Force would the rebels have that would even concern the Ukrainian forces? So I don't think they're looking to take down any planes.
Well, they had captured the rebels, let's call them. They're called, I don't remember what they're called now. But anyway, they had captured at least one of these giant vehicles with the 4 anti-aircraft missiles on it. That doesn't mean you can use them. And that had only been a week or two before this happened. So somebody had to place a crew on there to be able to use it. And that appears to be what they were out there. They shot down a couple, 3 vehicles in a very few aircraft in a very few days. So I don't know if it was some halfway trained outfit that maybe Soviets brought over somebody to command and train them, or whether entire crew was brought in. I don't know if that will ever come out, but something along those lines had to happen. Yeah.
You know what, James? It's just a matter of time, too, where one of these missile systems gets on a ship that docks itself either off the east or west coast of the United States and does the same thing all over again.
Right. That would be very hard to defend against if the people doing it had really good command and control and knew all about electronic warfare and were able to get a ship into the area without somebody on a cell phone blabbing and screwing up the whole program.
I mean, that's an act of war as far as I'm concerned.
Oh, yeah, very much so. But it looks to me like we're in for a period of time with that happening. First, we have the W war, over there in the Middle East for no good reason whatsoever. And that has caused us, you have Clinton first with his total screwing up Flight 800. We weren't prepared. W went in for other reasons than let's spread democracy all over because democracy don't attack democracies, when all they were really there for was to project power and control oil until the oil ran out. You know, that has so destabilized that entire area that it's almost impossible with that kind of money behind a force out there that, you know, that could really do some serious damage to this country. As you say, you don't even have to come on shore to do it.
No, not at all. So here you are, James, former police officer, where you basically took an oath to protect people. You became an investigative reporter. How do you feel personally about all that has happened to you and your wife and that's happening today to all of us?
I believe my wife would put it in more emotional terms, and as she should. I will tell you from my terms, first of all, of course, I was appalled. You know, you're there as a police officer to protect and defend the California Constitution and the United States Constitution, and we actually did believe in that stuff. I was there in the 60s and 70s before medical retirement took me out. I was there during, I was in the National Guard during the Vietnam War, and I was a police officer during the Vietnam War, and we had lots of riots and whatnot, and your defense of the Constitution could become a little irritated at times, but you really did believe in that kind of stuff. And to watch the process totally run over you, the first thing I figured out was, when did we lose the Republic? Well, hopefully I will, before I get too old to do these things, have a major book out on that, because what I found out was stunning, and I don't want to go into it here, but it was absolutely stunning. So that is the thing that has gotten to me this whole time. We lost the Republic a long time ago, and I put a definitive date on it, and then we lost even the facade of democracy. We are in a propagandist political era.
I think that date was November 22nd, 1963.
That is one of the dates. The date for the loss of the Republic, you always lose a Republic when a declared war starts. So December 7th, 1941, you lost it. We never got it back. And the reasons we went into that war aren't what everybody thinks. And I'll leave it at that. I mean, that's not even close to what the history books say. But then you come and, yeah, the assassination of JFK, the start of the Vietnam War, you go down a whole series. We have lost the ability to control our destiny, the masses, me, we, and the masses. We can get it back, but you have to have something that ignites the spark. And you had the Tea Party thing that looked like it was going to get started, but quite frankly, whoever they were using for economic advisors, it was just horrendous, and they really, really got out in the weeds.
Ramzi Youssef said he's a terrorist. He's proud of it. He's proud of the fact that he's tried to attack the U.S. government.
Yeah.
And he says, and this is what he says about the U.S. government, you are liars, you are butchers, and you are hypocrites. What do you think of that statement?
Well, I do my best to to really get into why they are thinking what they're thinking, whether it was the Japanese or the terrorists today and whatnot. For every project that I'm working on, I even try to get into Kallstrom's mind. I was able to do that pretty successfully, although it didn't keep me from getting indicted. He's right. If you look at it from their perspective, all you can do, don't like our freedoms. Now, anybody that believes that nonsense, just go ahead and wave the flag. You'll never regain control of your government. You have to be able to outthink the propagandists that are pushing you in whatever direction the power structure wants you to be pushed.
But why go after innocent people? Why go after planes that have children, men and women on it? Is that just the only way they can fight back?
If
you're going to fight back, go after military targets. Go to war with our soldiers, but don't kill innocent people. Don't knock down towers. Don't do that. Why do they do that, Jim?
Because they don't have the ability to put armies together and air forces together and navies together to be able to go toe-to-toe with us. Will they somewhere maybe 100 years from now? I don't know. But they can't now, so they're fighting back in the only way that they can. And then there's religion that comes into it. Once religion, I don't know if it's Christianity, the Muslims, it doesn't matter what religion it is, when it gets seriously involved in foreign policy, everything goes to hell in a handbasket. And so that also fits in there. And I don't know how somebody from a Christian nation can really fully put themselves into the mind of a Muslim. Or vice versa, you know.
Let's go to Derek in St. Louis. He's east of the Rockies, obviously. Derek, go ahead.
Well, the day Flight 800 blew up, George, I actually talked to you about this, and James, you might have been on that day. I heard about the plane blowing up, turned on CNN, and they were in the middle of interviewing the rescue crew that would be called to a disaster. And the thing that struck me like a brick in the head, this crew was following Flight 800 before it ever blew up and witnessed it blow up. What are the odds that a rescue crew would actually be there before the plane ever blew up?
That
didn't make a bit of sense to me.
Right. Well, that was obviously part of the program that they were setting up to make it look like they were having a Navy exercise offshore when they were trying to protect aircraft. If there wasn't going to be a bomb coming in from the airport, it was obviously going to be something happening into the air. And they had National Guard units out. Of course, they wouldn't know that they were doing anything but an exercise. And these people undoubtedly didn't have a clue. But there was a pretty sophisticated operation in progress out there, so if things did go sideways, that they would have people there right now to take care of it.
Why does it seem that things have calmed down in terms of mass terrorism since 9/11? I'm not including the Boston bombers. I think that was isolated between the brothers, in my opinion. But, I mean, have we stopped and thwarted big plans?
I think so. I think that the Malaysian Air 370 was intended to be something quite significant.
And that may not be over.
Not Israel. And it seems to me that there's about 99% chance that that's been taken care of, because that's a lose it, you know, use it or lose it type situation. So I think it would have been used by now. But I believe that we have been quite successful. We are getting up to speed finally. But that can't continue if the big money out of oil in the Arab lands there, the Muslim lands there, gets put to use.
Right, because they already say that groups like ISIS, that they might have $300 million in their coffers.
Right, and that's just barely scratching the surface.
that's their chump change. James, stay with us. We're going to come back in just a moment here on Coast to Coast AM and take final phone calls with you as we talk about the 18th anniversary of the downing of TWA Flight 800 and, sadly, of course, this other disaster that happened over Ukraine. I'm George Norrie, back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, James Sanders with us. Jim, I just got the most fascinating, strange email, and let me paraphrase it to you and get your reaction.
Okay.
And he basically said, George, the crash today was not Malaysia Airlines Flight 17, it was Flight 370. Trust me, it was that plane. Isn't that strange?
Yes, it is. I would certainly like to hear more to be able to evaluate that, you know, just on a personal basis and a professional basis, but that's obviously a very interesting concept.
Well, you know, when you think of a couple of things, one is, what are the odds of two Malaysia airline flights crashing within several months of each other? One, you know, maybe in a hijacking case, the other in a missile attack. That is an interesting email.
Yes, it is. I hope whoever that person is keeps communicating with you if they have special information.
They don't. They just basically said that they thought that this plane, he said, the way things looked, it looked like maybe they were, you know, things were painted on it. Bizarre. Bizarre.
Very bizarre and quite interesting.
It sure is. Let's go to the phones again. We go to Elaine in Waterford, Connecticut on the wild card line. Hello, Elaine. Thank you. Go ahead.
Hi. Mr. Sanders, I got your book from my dad, who I cherish more than anything in the world. He was a Battle of the Bulge survivor.
Oh, goodness. Okay.
But anyway, and also my boyfriend, my brother's girlfriend at the time, both of her parents got killed on that flight.
Oh.
They were going off on a trip together, and it took her years to get over it. But my question for you, Mr. Sanders, is what, if anything, did the Coast Guard know about this?
Oh, that's a good question, actually. They were involved in the earliest hours with what is called SEAL Team 6 in transporting what the members from part of SEAL Team 6 were bringing up from the ocean that they needed to get out of the ocean before the actual investigation began, and putting it on at least one Coast Guard cutter and taking it to a dock where I was able to gather the information from the senior Coast Guard NCO in charge of security for that dock. And what was being brought ashore was described to me, and it never made the hangars. Everything from missile parts to another plane and that kind of stuff.
How many witnesses, Jim, on the TWA Flight 800 saw that smaller plane?
I want to say three. I haven't read them specifically for a while. There's not a lot, but there's just enough. There's one in particular who really seemed to be watching. It's the kind of thing that if you're not focused on it, you're just not going to see it.
And where might that plane be and the pilot?
The pilot and the plane, I'm sure they were brought up off the ocean floor. And, the remains of the pilot, that was part of the initial culling. See, the divers that were used, it took several days before they were allowed to go into the water and start doing.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it didn't happen immediately.
That's strange. Like,
yeah.
They had to go and pick it up first?
Yeah, they had to clean it up a bit first.
There's
no doubt about that. Yeah.
You think the smaller plane that was going to crash into 800 was knocked out too?
Yes, because there was quite obviously a significant explosive event on the left side of the plane from something that appears not to have actually collided with the plane, but the force did. The force created it was under, at least somewhere under the left wing, because it created a hydraulic event that pushed, the wing was almost full of aviation fuel. It pushed it up, blew out the top, the wing, into little pieces, and also where the left wing attaches to the center wing, to what's called the center wing tank, that whole area was blown into little pieces. So there was a very significant hydraulic event that could only come from a warhead explosion outside the plane.
So are you saying that the missile from the Navy ship took out the little terrorist plane, which indeed then took out, through the explosion, TWA Flight 800?
Yeah, well, one missile came in from the right side of the plane. Another one came up on the
missiles.
Left side of the plane. I had an intelligence officer tell me, as in the early stages when I was describing this to him, it was somebody I'd known for a while, and he said, Sanders, if they were stupid enough to be doing a CEC exercise, real or imagined, out there, they'd at least be smart enough to have a backstop, which was his term. And the backstop would be a significantly larger anti-missile missile. And that his theory, which sounds good to me, but I don't know, was that is probably why you had TWA kind of sandwiched between two missiles. A smaller missile that I described on the right side coming in to the plane on the right side, and a larger missile on the left side. It would seem logical to me that the missile that I tracked all these years was probably trying to get at that smaller plane and needed to go through Flight 800 to get at it.
Ah, but and it got them both.
Got them both.
Let's go next to Chris in San Diego. Chris, thank you for calling. Go ahead.
I'm actually so glad that you guys are talking about this tonight, because I've never came forward. I saw it happen. I'm originally from New York. I was surfing when it happened out of Mauritius, and it was, I didn't see not one missile. I did actually see three trails going up into this plane.
Yeah, okay.
So, I mean, you know, and I remember immediately after when I went back from surfing and got home, I put on the news. It was Channel 12 News, which is Long Island, like the local news. And the funny part is that I think it was like the following day, somebody had came forward with a videotape of like a family reunion where in the background you see the missile come up as well. And they only showed it on the news once.
Right. Can I ask you for a favor? If you're willing to do it off the air, give them your information. I would never reveal it unless you wanted it, but I would really like to talk to you further to say tomorrow or whenever you have time, because let me tell you what you just described. It's a trail
absolutely.
I have been following for years. We know beyond any doubt that there was a video that was taken.
Yes, I saw that video on Channel 12 News, and it was only shown once.
Was Channel 12 NBC? I'm not familiar with
that. No.
Channel 12 is Long Island News.
It's a local.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Yeah, I've forgotten.
It's
like
the local access.
But, I mean, I was sitting. I mean, the waves were like, you know, it was like the end of the day. The waves were just kind of calmed down. So I'm just laying back on my board. And I remember I saw it, you know, I kind of was watching the planes go over because that's like, you know, where they really go out to sea at that point. And I remember just seeing that one plane just kind of coming up and around. And then I see this trail come up behind it. And I'm like, you know, I'm kind of looking, and like, that kind of looks a little weird. And then next thing I know, I saw another one come up. And one came up from, like, it looked like it came up from behind me all over the land.
Did you see 800?
Now I'm looking at the trail, and then, boom, I see this explosion. And about 6 or 7 seconds later, I heard the explosion. You know, kind of faint. It wasn't that loud. And I just saw this big fireball, and then that's actually when, I guess, the plane, when it split apart, because then you saw one piece go up, and then the other piece turn and come down to the water.
Yeah. You probably heard one of the missiles breaking the sound barrier. But sound only travels at a very slow speed, and so it's hard to match up sound to what you're actually seeing. You know.
I'm going to put him on hold for you, James, and see if he can give us the information that Tom will give back to you, okay?
Sure, great.
It's a small world.
Yeah.
Let's go next to Caroline in New York, New York on the wild card line. Hi, Caroline, go ahead.
Hi, good morning, gentlemen. Thanks for a wonderful show. I had a thought regarding the latest Malaysian plane that went down. What if Russia shot it down and they're trying to blame Ukraine to turn the world, you know, opinion against Ukraine? Because right now, you know, Ukraine is the underdog and people are sympathetic towards it. And what if they're, you know, trying to make the world hate Ukraine and think of them as the bad guy? You know, we're just, you know, the paper today was all about sanctions against Russia and stuff like that. So what if it's something like that?
Well, that's a very common thing for governments to do, not just ours. So it's a very logical thing to be concerned about.
Jim, it seems that this thing just doesn't go away, doesn't it?
No. And the way the world's going, I don't know what's going to ever slow it down before it explodes into a very, very significant conflict.
Let's go to Greg in Louisiana. First time caller for Greg. Go ahead, Greg.
Yeah, well, just listening, and I want to thank you guys for a great show. Public high school history teacher, matter of fact, and that's a battle in of itself to kind of teach the truth in a public high school
these days.
But
sure is.
But going on with this, you know, I think back towards the end of this past school year, seeing the beginnings of this Russia-Ukraine conflict, trying to teach these seniors in my class, you know, to pay attention that, you know, a very promising Archduke moment, I might call it, might be happening in their very near future. And it seems like today, that may be what have transpired, a very Archduke Ferdinand moment, the shot heard around the world. The song you were playing earlier, Winds of Change, you know, it just feels like something was different today about that plane. I also had that theory, too. It wasn't my email, but when I was first called in, the guy asked me what I'm talking about the Malaysian Flight 370 being somehow involved into this, if it's not some kind of, you know, NATO. I think NATO has more to gain than Russia. From the previous caller, you know, Russia could have staged this, but NATO, I think, definitely has more to gain by consolidating the EU, definitely strengthening the Anglo-European Empire, so to speak. But the question I had is, you know, just from a private investigator's standpoint, what's been the most, I guess, for us, for you to just kind of tell us what is the most challenging thing, maybe, or what we should be looking for in this, the ripple effect of this, what should we be looking for to see in the coming days, whether it's the rhetoric coming from, you know, the war hawks from our government, or if it's, because I've heard Putin and them been very quiet today. They haven't really said much. So as an investigator, what are you looking for them to say that kind of tips you in one direction?
I would initially, I'm going to be paying attention to John McCain, because he seems to be the leader of the militarists in the Congress. And after that, you do have to see, where is Putin taking this? If he's going to keep dialing it back down, it means he's trying to get out. He's not trying to take advantage of it. He's trying to avoid getting screwed. Those are the obvious things. But the lady that was just on, she really gave the proper warning. You have to watch and see whether this is a setup in order to try once again for the militarists to bring us into that region and get heavily involved in war. I find it amazing that we have people in the United States Congress, and apparently a fair number of them, who really want to get us involved in another world war.
I think if it was the Russian pro-rebels and they simply said, we made a mistake. Oh, we are so sorry. We thought we were shooting down a military plane. What's anybody else going to do?
Right. If that's what it ends up, then the situation will have been essentially diffused.
Correct.
But, yeah. If that goes away, then start digging a foxhole,
Alan in Clearwater, Florida, you're on with James Sanders. Go ahead, Alan.
Mr. Sanders, I wanted to just tell you to thank you for what you're doing. You have reinvigorated my faith and truth in this country, because you are certainly an American patriot. We cannot have a free society without the truth. It's just, they are just incompatible. You must have truth in a free society. And George, I want to thank you for having Mr. Sanders on. Shows like this is why Coast to Coast is so unique and is what it is. And I was going to ask Mr. Sanders another question and suggest some stuff, but I'm just going to leave it at that. Thank you, Mr. Sanders, and thank you, George, for having him. This is the kind of thing that Coast to Coast needs to go after. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you. We always appreciate
That old Jack Nicholson line, you can't handle the truth. I think we can, Jim.
Oh, my goodness. Of course we can. There, without a doubt, we can. I wish I knew how to project all this out further. I'm getting to this stage of my life. I'm 69 years old. I don't feel 69.
No, keep going. We need you.
Yeah, well, as long as I can get out there and keep making progress, hopefully the younger people will get energized enough and off they'll go and things will start improving. I firmly believe that we're still capable of doing it.
We've got Chris's number for you, by the way. He does want to talk to you, so
great.
Tom will give it to you right after you're off the air in a few minutes here.
Excellent.
And let us know if that leads to anything, okay?
Yeah, I will. Yeah.
Well, what was that video he was trying to describe?
Oh, that is so fascinating. I know for a fact that NBC, ABC, CBS, and the very young Fox News were in a bidding war that night for that video, because I got it from the head of the Fox News team that was trying to get it. And at $50,000, Fox News was cut out of it, even though they were willing to go a lot further. They believed that NBC got it, but they weren't sure. And I have two other sources that were involved in the thing coming it back into the studio off of Long Island, being bounced off a satellite and brought in, and then the FBI comes in and seizes it. I'm on the trail of it. I am quite confident I know where it is.
And it's a video that shows the missile or missiles going up?
Exactly.
Wow.
Yeah.
That would be something.
I've been on that for almost 18 years, and I know if they don't destroy it that they do have it, and I know where it is stored.
Have you checked YouTube yet?
No.
It's probably on YouTube.
I wish it was. If it is, I think somebody would have told me. If they haven't, please tell me.
Steve, truck driving in Arizona. Go ahead, Steven.
Hey, thank you, George. Great show tonight.
Sure thing.
I wanted to ask James two questions, but one of them was already answered. I sent you an email earlier about what were the possibilities of Flight 370 be if it was shot down. And that was just the start of war. And the other question is on Flight 800. I heard there was another tape. Somebody, a couple on a beach, had a camera on a tripod.
Right.
And they caught the rocket going up, you know, the missile going up and hitting the plane coming down. They had a friend in the FBI, a female, that they showed the tape to. She took it and didn't go through proper channels, I guess, she knew it would be covered up. So a long story short, I heard the tape was being investigated and they were going to knock the socks off the FBI and, you know, whatever. And they were having a big meeting up in the Twin Towers. And that's where the plane hit, was that meeting up there.
Jeez.
I told what I know of that, and I am quite confident, almost to 100%, that the bootleg of that tape, when it first came in, was made. And for years, I would periodically get a hold of that news person that had it. They were so incredibly afraid of dying, and I kept giving them a scenario where they could give it to me without them ever knowing it, and they could trust me because I never gave up any of my sources. I had a source that was right next to Louis Free that until very recently I've never even talked about that. And that's why I knew what was going on inside the FBI. I never gave up those sources, but I couldn't get this guy to get over being afraid of being taken out.
Well, you keep doing what you're doing, Jim, and we'll stay in touch with you. And, of course, don't forget the 230 souls that were aboard TWA Flight 800. I'm George Norrie, and I'll be back in a moment with L.A. Marzulli as the program continues with The Watchers.